Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. People you would never expect are turning to the food bank. That is according to Helen Donovan, chair of the board for Fair Share. Since January, 250 new families started using its services. That's nearly five times more than the same period last year. Inflation is crippling. Gas prices, housing costs, living expenses are through the roof. For some, there is little money left to buy food. More young people with families are seeking help. That is on top of the growing number of seniors and others who regularly drop in. The food bank is spending more than $50,000 a month buying food, up from the $40,000 it had budgeted. Donations are down because people are struggling to buy their own groceries and have reduced the number of donations at the grocery stores. For the first time in the history of the food bank, it was short peanut butter. If you don't know, that is a staple item for them. You will want to hear all the details for yourself. It's my pleasure to welcome back Helen Donovan, the chair of the board for the Fair Share Food Bank, to bring us back up to date. Welcome back, Helen Donovan.
Thank you very much.
The last time we spoke in December, the food bank experienced a 61% increase over the previous year. Can you update us on the current status?
Yes, I can. In fact, since January of this year, we are currently up 43% over the same time frame last year. So on top of the 60% increase last year, significant growth again. I can give you specifics if that is helpful.
Yes, I would be very interested in if you could kind of break that down for us and give us some real numbers so that we get a very concrete sense of this.
Okay. So the number of households served, and I'm talking January to June now, so the comparisons are identical. January to June in 2022, we had 4,176 households, 4,176. And that number is now up to 5,988. And that, in terms of the number of individuals served or the mouths fed, goes from 10,795 to 16,194.
Only last week, we watched the Bank of Canada hike interest rates once more to 4.75%. And we continue to see high gas prices and grocery bills that remain high, and rents continue to be through the roof. What other factors are you seeing in the people who find themselves coming to the food bank for help?
I don't think there needs to be any more because all of those are critical. All of those for anyone to have any kind of a life whatsoever, has to pay rent, has to put gas in their car if they have one, has to pay insurances. So as I've said before, the food bank is the only free option available in terms of basic necessities. So you spend your money on whatever else you must spend your money on. And I think what people have realized is because we're in a position to help, and we do, and we're willing to do so, they have the burden of having to feed their family and pay their bills somewhat reduced because they can now pay their bills and feed their family by availing of the food bank.
You alluded to it earlier, and I'd like to explore it a little bit more, and that is the demographics of the clients that you serve. You mentioned who's coming through the door. What changes or what increases have you seen thus far?
The group between 36 and 50, or let's say 25 to 50, is where the greatest growth is at this point. And I'm suggesting that that's where young families are coming into play. So their bills, by and large, would be higher. Mortgage rate increases would probably impact these people more so than either the younger or the older. And that's represents about 40, yeah, about close to 40% in that bracket. And that's where I think that's probably where the element of the community itself is most impacted, because that's the core of our community. That's the parents who have the children who, if they're enrolled in sports, if they're enrolled in extra school activities, if they need tutoring, that's the demographic that keeps the community alive. And we just feel that children especially must have nutritious food. And we've cut back on giving out things that we haven't purchased non-nutritious food in the last 3 months. We had to cut back on our funding in terms of our grocery bills. We were over budget by a significant amount.
As I'm listening to you talk, it strikes me that we're not talking about people who don't have a job or are on a government program. What we're talking about are people who are working, who are trying to make a go of it, and are just falling short. Am I hearing that correctly?
You are. Unfortunately, Robert, you are. We opened in Coburg on Saturday morning specifically to address that group, because up to that point in time, we were open mainly through the week. So Saturday has a full slate of volunteers and a full slate of people coming for assistance. And we just know from the requests that we're getting now, as we end the school year, school lunches and that sort of thing won't be as important. But, you know, children at home eat a lot. And the burden on the family to eat during the summer months is probably higher than it is during the school year. Kids are around, they want snacks, they want juice, they are always opening the fridge door and whatnot. So I think the summer is going to be a bit of a challenge for people, quite frankly.
How are you as the food bank finding it for sourcing the resources that you need, especially the food? How are these factors that we've discussed impacting the food bank's ability to provide for clients?
We have established resources and sources of food throughout the county primarily. In a couple of cases, we've had to go outside the county because of the availability and price warrants doing that. But the relationships have been established with the various supermarkets and wholesalers and retailers, and they're very good to us. They advise us in advance when there's an opportunity to order a special at their special prices. They make us aware when there's food that's not able to be sold and pass that on to us. So those relationships are very strong within the county, and we're very grateful for that.
But you did mention earlier that your budgets are being strained when it comes to buying food. Talk a bit about that, please.
Well, our original budget for the year on a monthly basis to spend was $43,000. And by the end of March, we were up in the $50,000, $52,000 range. So we have a food committee which sat down and reviewed what we were buying and what where we were spending and how we could spend a little less. So we decided we would only distribute nutritious food from the perspective of what we bought. So if a company donates sweets or cookies or something of that nature, we'll be happily going to give those out. But if we don't get those donations, we don't distribute them. We haven't cut back on protein or milk or dairy or vegetables and fruit. We have limited in cases of things like ketchup and mustard, you know, condiments and whatnot, which used to be available all the time. So we've held back on those. They're available maybe twice a month instead of every week. And the same thing with, for the first time ever in the history of the food bank, 2 weeks ago, we ran out of peanut butter. And what's happening now, Robert, is someone who ordinarily would put four or five items in their grocery cart when they went to get their groceries and then put it in the bin at the exit of the supermarket, they can't afford to buy those extra three or four items. So the cost of food doesn't only directly impact us as to what we're buying, it substantially reduces the amount of food that we collect on a food drive or just on a daily basis from the supermarket bins. So everyone is impacted by those costs. And as a result, we will be launching for the first time since pre-COVID a fundraising campaign this fall. We have had to dip into our reserves in order to meet the demand. And we are very fiscally responsible from the perspective of making sure we have the appropriate reserve funds to be sustainable throughout the future, because this issue is not going away, unfortunately. And we have to be prepared to replace our trucks or vans, our fridges, our freezers. So we can't run ourselves dry financially. So the board in May made that decision. We came up with three or four strategies to make sure we remain viable. And so this fall, hopefully with the help of the community and people like yourself, we will launch into a campaign to keep the doors open.
The Colborne fire where the grocery store is closed, the long-term impact on food security when that happens is pretty substantial. Has there been any response from the food bank to that, or have you talked to anybody within the community about the role of the food bank?
Actually, yes. We had a food drive planned in conjunction with the Colbert Police, the Crama Cruiser, which they very generously host for us every year. And this upcoming one on Saturday the 16th will be entirely passed over to Colbert. So any funds donated and any food donated will go directly to them.
We've spoken in the past about the need for a comprehensive approach to helping our neighbors and those in need. Has there been any progress in this area since we last spoke?
I just this morning was at a meeting that I think is going to move in that direction. Where, and this is a post-COVID, and it could be argued, I guess it's a little bit late to get started on this, but everybody had their own tasks to do in a post-COVID, to the point it's only now that we're able to come together collectively. And my prediction is in 2024, you're going to see a much more cohesive effort made on all of the agencies in the community towards all of those in the community who need us. And for example, here at the food bank, every second week we have someone come in from the legal society, and if any of our neighbors are in need of some advice as to where to go to get help from a legal perspective, we have a small office that they can have a confidential conversation. But there's no doubt that the efforts of all of the agencies would be stronger collectively than any one of us are individually. So personally, I see that as a goal, to work towards knowing what else is out there, who else is out there, and if I can help in some way to bring that together, I'll be happy to do that in the future.
In April, some staggering figures were released from the Daily Bread Food Bank in Toronto. They are feeding record numbers, and the budgets are just astronomical. They spend as much in a month now for helping people as they used to spend in a year. When you look at the various levels of government, what sort of policies do you think are needed to make a major difference to the current situation?
I feel that the need, for the most part, has been ignored. I believe that the system needs to be revamped so that access to necessities such as food are not left in the hands of a group of volunteers and a group of good-natured residents of a community. When you go back 35, 40 years ago, when food banks became first known in this community especially, it was for a very few people and it was on an emergency basis. The fact that we are now the supermarket of choice for 6,000 households is criminal, in my opinion. I don't see how that can be. There has to be policies and procedures and opportunities in place where people are able to earn their money and they're able to be able to spend it proportionately in keeping their family safe and housed and fed. So I can't stray too far into the political arena in terms of feelings and comments. Be happy to have that one online with you somewhere.
Can you elaborate what you see going forward over the summer and into the fall in terms of demand for service and your ability to meet that demand?
We're prepared to meet the demand. Again, strategically, we have plotted out our plan to meet a growing number. The scale continues to rise, and we know that, and we are working proactively to make sure that we're prepared. To the extent of how long that can last, we had a reserve, if you like, a contingency fund that had a I think a 10 to 12 month stability just a few months ago, and it's down to the 8 to 10 month. And that's, what if we had a tragedy of some sort? What if we had an environmental crisis whereby the food bank was serving not only people who typically come to the food bank, but are now on our doors because of some emergency that's happened? And not to be doomsday about it all, but we try and make sure that fiscally and proactively we do what needs to be done, so we're well positioned for the future.
Well, I guess the Colborne fire is a good example of that.
It is a good example. I mean, here you have a community served by one supermarket, and all of a sudden the resources are gone for everyone there. It's not just food bank people, but anyone who may do their shopping, people who live nearby and don't have transportation. And I know that there's some efforts being made in terms of transportation services and whatnot to help people out there. But that's a classic case where not being prepared or not having a reserve would be disastrous.
What events do you have planned for the summer in terms of fundraising or collecting donations? You mentioned Cram and Cruiser was one. Anything else we can look forward to over the summer?
Yes, the Real Estate Board is hosting a golf tournament at Ashbrook Golf Country on Dale Road, and that's the 23rd of August. And they generously are passing all proceeds over to Fair Share. And we were their recipient last year. We're very privileged to be chosen again as their charity of choice. So as many golfers care, I think it's $150 for the day, including a meal, and all funds raised will come to Fair Share. And the summer activity basically is just that one. In the fall, we have some plans in the works right now, which I'm not able to share at this stage of the game, but it will be way more focused come September.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that come the fall.
Okay.
Helen Donovan, thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
That was Helen Donovan, Chair of the Board for the Fair Share Food Bank. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.